Hello, and welcome to The West Steps, a podcast from the Colorado Children's Campaign, where we explore the issues that matter for kids and families in Colorado. I'm Jackie Zubricki. Today's episode is part two of our Children's Campaign legislative preview. Colorado's General Assembly started meeting earlier this month as we're recording, and we're talking with the Children's Campaign's policy directors about the challenges facing kids and families in 2024 and the ideas that could create better and more equitable systems that address those challenges. We'll hear today from Melissa Mares, Director of Early Childhood, about why preschool and infant and toddler care are so important. Then we'll hear from Tony Sarge, Director of Child and Family Health, about the complex dynamics around children's health coverage this year and why supporting maternal health makes a difference for kids. If you want to hear about what we're working on to support families' economic prosperity, equitable school finance, and youth mental health, check out part one of this preview in your podcast feed. For now, let's get started. Melissa, thank you so much for joining us today. Can you take a minute to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your role?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm happy to be here. My name is Melissa Mares. I'm the Director of Early Childhood at the Colorado Children's Campaign, which means that I lead our early childhood policy and advocacy portfolio for mostly state-level policy, but some local policy as well as some federal advocacy, all for what's best for our state's youngest kiddos and their families.
Awesome. And can you tell us a little bit about how you personally got interested in policy related to early childhood?
Absolutely. So this is a deeply personal work for me. I'm a former kindergarten teacher. I taught 1 year of first grade and 4 of kindergarten at a Spanish immersion school in Eugene, Oregon. Interestingly, I was born and raised in Denver, but was there while my husband was in school. And very quickly, like I went in there, I think very naive, like, oh, this is great. Kindergarten is awesome. They have the same sense of humor as me, and I'll be getting in before they have problems, before we see these gaps emerge. And like many folks may already know, I saw firsthand that it's really early childhood, prenatal. That's when the interventions are needed. I had a class of kindergartners where some of them are reading fluently in English at a second grade level, while others had never, it seemed like, played with another kid before. So they are like socially years and years behind. And the task of trying to teach that entire group of 25, 26 kiddos is really quite impossible. It was just, this is my passion. It's my calling to make the job of a kindergarten teacher much easier, much more joyful, sort of the way it should be, because kiddos are and their families are supported.
Great. And tell us a little bit about why the Children's Campaign as an advocacy organization is focused on early childhood.
The Children's Campaign has early childhood as a key priority, and it's been that way since the organization was founded in 1985. Early childhood was recognized even then as a critical period of development in the life of a child and their family. So we know that when a family has a newborn, they're often at their lowest earning potential, most in need of the kinds of supports that don't reach far enough in our society today. We also know that brain development is really remarkable in the first 5 years of life. Millions of neural connections are made. And so this is where we can make huge impacts with policy and interventions that support children having access to safe care spaces, high quality preschool, care providers being recognized for the essential service they provide us. I could go on and on, but this is a key component of all the work we do so that families can be successful in the long term.
Well, so you mentioned us, the organization's focused on it since 1985. There's a story about some of the founders of the organization and how they chose to advocate for early childhood. Am I recalling something about bringing kids to the Capitol to remind legislators about like the fact that people need care and support for really young kids?
Oh, yeah. One of our founders is the incomparable Anna Jo Haynes, who is just the reason why we have statewide early childhood systems today, or one of the key reasons. And she will speak about how in those early days, they actually brought babies over to the Capitol. We're like, babies are here. Like, you need to consider them as having needs and needing government support. And I'm just so inspired by her every day as a mentor, as a role model. She's a phenomenal advocate, and she's, all of our other founders are as well.
Awesome. Yeah. So flashing forward from almost 40 years to 2024, what are some of the biggest policy issues that you see affecting kids and families in early childhood?
This is a great question. It's a huge question. I think we've been thinking about it differently since the pandemic began, that it showed us what many people already know. Folks with little kids, people who care for kids, already knew that early childhood was essential, but many who didn't, for whom this wasn't their day-to-day life, really had their eyes opened in 2020, that childcare is the reason why we have a workforce that can hold down a job. And if someone doesn't have a consistent, stable childcare scenario supporting them and their family, it's much, much harder for them to keep their job. So we have sort of the macro that this is just essential to all of our other success, that children are cared for in safe places, that they learn how to be human, how to be good community members. And then we have the micro, which is all the work that we've been doing since I joined the campaign in 2020, but obviously really since Anna Jo and before the campaign was even founded, to create a functional, aligned, streamlined system of early childhood programs and services that really meets families where they are and supports them so they can succeed. It was identified in part because of the pandemic that families were jumping through hoops, filling out different applications for only a certain number of hours of care per day or per week. Families were bearing this intense burden of trying to find stable care. That is just not just, it's not how I think a caregiving society would be set up. And on the other side of that, providers themselves are barely making ends meet. A child care subsidy doesn't really cover the cost of care, so providers are subsidizing that care on their own backs, some via second mortgages, second jobs, on food stamps or receiving public benefits. This is not how a society that's thriving sets up care for its youngest children. And so everything that we do is really seen through that lens, that care is essential, it's not currently prioritized. How can we do better? So in 2024, you all listeners may have heard about our universal preschool program, which kicked off last year. We are deeply in the weeds thinking about how can it be improved. It's a phenomenal improvement already to have half day preschool available to all 4-year-olds in the state. And we also know there's a long way to go, that the scope of this change, I've heard the state staff call it like epic change, and that's not an understatement, has also meant that it's been messy, it's been complicated, and there are areas for growth and improvement. So we're keeping our eyes on those. We're also looking at making sure that our leaders understand that children don't just magically show up in preschool ready to learn. That yes, universal preschool was a phenomenal accomplishment for the state, and we have a very, very difficult time for families to find care for an infant, that we need to think about this as an interconnected system of programs and supports. And we're not done because we have universal preschool. It's not really a box that can be checked. So I'd say broadly speaking, that's the other focus of our work, is making sure families have access to care, to support programs, to all the kinds of things they need beyond just that half day of preschool.
Awesome. Well, thank you for laying all that out. Within that, are there specific bills or policy areas coming up this session that you're focusing on that you think our listeners should know about?
Yes. So a couple of things to know is that the last several years we've had an immense influx of federal stimulus money coming into the state. So millions and millions of dollars to support all sorts of programs, including early childhood and childcare. And unfortunately, this year's the first year where we're sort of back to a business as usual pre-pandemic budget. So some of what should be on folks' radar is, are we defending the funding amounts the governor would like to go to our early childhood programs and services? Do our leaders know how essential it is that the Department of Early Childhood have the money for the staff they need to run their programs successfully? Do they understand that universal preschool, the original application, is sort of like a baseline. It's not a final product in that it's not the universal application that we envision in our long-term vision for this system, that we need money, we need support, we need resources for the state to build that out to the point where a family could apply in one place, only verify their income or any other qualifying factors once, and find out immediately what they were eligible for and how that could combine to cover a stable care environment and education for their child. So there's a long way to go. That'll be a huge part of our work this year, is educating and advocating for that long-term vision. Like, yes, we've made incredible progress, but we're not done. The other pieces that are coming up are, to be more specific, things like improvements to our child care subsidy program. A number of different organizations, legislators, and advocates do see this long-term vision, understand that our system is interconnected in the way that it actually is, and they're looking at our CCAP program, our child care assistance program, in ways that it can be improved to support families. So we'll be closely involved in that work. The Department of Early Childhood will be running a piece of legislation to make sure that we can fund with state money what we had been funding with that one-time federal money, a licensing division focused specifically on providers who speak languages other than English. Right now, it's just focused on English and Spanish. So we want to make sure that that has the state money it needs to continue to successfully support providers. There's more I could go on and on, but hopefully that gives you a sense of what we expect to happen this year in the legislature.
Yes, that's a great start. And I know there are many, many things the legislature could do, but I'd love for you to complete this sentence. If the legislature could do one thing to support early childhood this session, it would.
I'm going big. This is my magic wand vision, and I will connect it back to our early childhood work. It would be referring a measure to the ballot to take down the Taxpayers' Bill of Rights, or TABOR. The challenge we have in Colorado is that it's incredibly difficult to raise public funding, any new revenue to support our program, because we have a law from the 90s that requires any tax increase or revenue increase go to the voters, and voters don't tend to support taxes. It's really an uphill fight to prove to someone that any one of these phenomenal programs would be worth funding. And so I actually co-lead a coalition with my colleague Lauren at the Children's Campaign and the Colorado Statewide Parent Coalition, which is a phenomenal organization as well, that's looking at how can we change our tax policy to raise new revenue to fund early childhood. That some of the systemic issues I mentioned, like providers not being paid the full cost of care, the money needed to change that is far more than we can raise without changing the way we collect taxes in the state. So that would be my dream. And that's definitely something we're working for in the long term. It may not happen this year, but the Growing Our Future Coalition is what we co-lead with the Statewide Parent Coalition, lots of coalitions. But with Growing Our Future, that's what we're working towards. We have empowered parents and providers to understand how Colorado's tax policy works and why it needs to be changed. And would really encourage anyone who's interested in learning more about that to reach out to me or to Lauren. Because it's not going to be quick work, but it's the most important work that I can think of.
Great. And we will make sure we share links to that along with this episode. And yeah, I love how we start out talking about little kids and suddenly we're talking about statewide tax reform. But this is how these systems get the support they need. So thank you for laying that out for us. And thank you so much for taking time to join us today. Look forward to talking again soon. Thank you so much for joining us here today. I'm hoping you can take a minute to introduce yourself and tell us a little about your role.
Yeah, thanks, Jackie. My name is Toni Sarge. I use she, her pronouns, and I am the Director of Child and Family Health Policy here at the Colorado Children's Campaign.
Awesome. So how did you personally get interested in policies related to child and family health? I know you've been doing this work for a long time, but you're new to the Children's Campaign, so I want to help people get to know a little bit about you.
Yeah, I am so grateful to be a pretty new member of the Colorado Children's Campaign team, but I have been really passionate about health care, health policy, and public health for a long time. When I was 19 years old, I was actually hospitalized after a surgically caused spinal cord injury. I lost the ability to move, to feel my lower limbs, and I was hospitalized for 3 days and then moved into an inpatient unit with other folks who were recovering from various spinal cord injuries and neurological surgeries and accidents. And then I was there in full-time physical and occupational therapy for a month. So thankfully, for a lot of reasons, this was just after the passage of the Affordable Care Act. So at 19 years old, I was covered under my parents' high-quality employer-sponsored health insurance plan. Their insurance out-of-pocket maximum was $3,000, which meant the over $100,000 health bill that came to my family, they only had to pay $3,000 for. So this really terrible and scary thing that happened to me at the age of 19 that could have really ruined my family's life or, you know, brought on a lot of additional challenges, didn't. But the fact is it still does and still really impacts lives. And so health coverage and health generally just is not something that the United States considers a right. But I and those of us who work for the Children's Campaign and our allies and colleagues around the state of Colorado do believe that. And so I believe that we should change that.
Yeah. So for some families, that $100,000 bill, they might still be paying it off today. Well, thanks for sharing that. And can you talk a little bit about why the Children's Campaign is an organization that cares about kids and families and their well-being is focused on health? Just spell it out for us a little bit.
So ensuring that children and families have access to high quality and affordable healthcare is really essential to the overall well-being of all of us and our entire community. In a lot of ways, Colorado has made great strides in ensuring that kids have access to insurance and health access in general, but disparities really do remain in terms of healthcare coverage and quality healthcare services among Colorado kids and families. Also, I'll say that the maternal morbidity and mortality rates in Colorado and around the country are rising due to the way that institutional and interpersonal racism is really intertwined with our healthcare system, which leads to worse health outcomes for Black and Brown pregnant and postpartum people and their babies and their children. And when any members of our community are at higher risk of death, dying, or illness, we are all at risk for death, dying, or illness. So that's really why it's important for us at the campaign.
Great. So you spoke a little bit about just these disparities in who has access to insurance, rising maternal morbidity. But is there anything else that you point out, or what do you think are some of the biggest challenges for kids and families' health today in 2024 as we're starting this year? What's on your mind?
Yeah, I think when we look at health priorities for 2024 and this legislative session that's just getting kicked off, we know that coverage is going to continue to be at the top of the priority list for those of us at the Colorado Children's Campaign and our partners around the state. When Medicaid disenrollments were halted in 2020, we saw more folks get covered and stay covered on Medicaid. Unfortunately, with the ending of the public health emergency last year, we are now seeing really large amounts of procedural disenrollments, meaning kids and families are losing their health coverage with no real reason besides logistical glitches. So we're really, continuing to pay attention to that. But it's not all bad news. The last few years, Colorado Children's Campaign has worked on some really incredible legislation to keep kids and families covered, including HB 22-1289, which is Cover All Coloradans, which expands health coverage to children and pregnant folks, regardless of immigration status. Really exciting coming that just started in 2024. This legislation created a special enrollment period for pregnant people. This means that now becoming pregnant, not just giving birth, will trigger a special enrollment period for health coverage so that Colorado pregnant folks can get the prenatal care they need and covered. And that just started right at the beginning of 2024. So that's really exciting. We're also leading and supporting a lot of the implementation work around HB 23-1300, which is continuous eligibility medical coverage. So that's extending Medicaid and Child Health Plan Plus or CHIP Plus coverage for children ages 0 to 3 and also for adults who've been released from Department of Correction facilities. So really looking at expanding that coverage and making sure folks who need to be eligible for service for health coverage are staying eligible. And then in terms of maternal health, you know, we're also really always paying attention to how we're expanding coverage and access to services for folks to birth when and where and how they want to. And so that's looking at doula and midwifery services, making sure those are covered, and looking at some of those coverages.
Great. So, and if people are interested in learning a little bit about the continuous eligibility or some of those other bills, we've had episodes on these in previous seasons, so we can link to those in our show notes. Tony, this might sound clear, or maybe it doesn't, but why is focusing on maternal health an issue that's important for kids and for families?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think we're learning, you know, more and more from both a public health perspective and a social determinants of health perspective that the kind of long-term health outcomes of children as they become adults really does start in during pregnancy. Therefore, the pregnant person and their life and the social determinants of health around their pregnancy and their life also really matters on health outcomes. So focusing on pregnant folks and folks before they're getting pregnant, as they're getting pregnant, and during birth, we really are seeing how that correlates and connects to long-term health and well-being of children and families and a healthier community overall.
Awesome. Thank you. So a lot happening with Medicaid, a lot happening with maternal health. Is there anything else you're working on this legislative session that you want to share with our listeners?
Yeah, we're also really excited to be working with Senator Marchman this legislative session on an important Title 10 resolution, which is just a way of saying that we are really focused on advocating for the continued funding of our Title 10 family planning services in the state of Colorado. So you can keep an eye out for that and seeing the Children's Campaign as continuing to support family planning access in Colorado.
Great. And yeah, I'm family planning part of the same idea of making sure that taking care of women's health, mother's health, family's health is part of taking care of kids and families' health too. So to wrap it up, I've been asking everyone this question and would be curious to hear your answer. If the legislature could do one thing to support child and family health this year, what would it do?
Well, I think if I had a magic wand, I would have us get comprehensive and high quality health coverage to all people in Colorado, regardless of documentation status, regardless of income, regardless of employment status, et cetera. Without that magic wand, I think for this legislative session, I will really take and appreciate the continued centering of children and families' voices who are most impacted, especially by systemic racism and other barriers to health and health coverage, and hearing from them about how we can improve health and well-being for those families.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll look forward to hearing more from you soon.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us for the West Steps. If there's something you'd like to hear us talk about on the podcast, send us an email at media@coloradokids.org. The West Steps and the rest of the Children's Campaign's work is possible thanks to our philanthropic funders and our generous sponsors and donors. You can support our work by visiting coloradokids.org. The West Steps is a production of the Colorado Children's Campaign. It was created by Beza Tedes. Our theme music is by Trenton White. Our producer is John Wojcik, and I'm your host, Jackie Zubricki.